When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
All right, guys, before we get started, let me tell you about the Dodge Summer Clearance Event. Heat up the summer at the Dodge Summer Clearance Event. Show a little muscle with the Dodge Charger or Dodge Challenger and leave everyone else envying your beach bod. Come in now to the Dodge Summer Clearance Event and see why so many are joining the Brotherhood of Muscle. Hey guys, welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea. We're here in the studio with our friend Alistair Weaver from Edmunds.com. And before we begin, I'm going to tell you real quick about JB Welds, a proud new sponsor of the CarCast show. This epoxy adhesive brand is used by both pros and experienced DIYers and have trusted for over 50 years. It can be found at retailers everywhere, including Home Depot, AutoZone, Walmart, and Amazon. You know, that intro noise is a Dodge Hellcat doing launch control, and I'm driving a Hellcat wide body. You probably had the same car recently or something.
I think it's the same guy. I think it's the same charity event.
It's the big bright orange.
Yeah.
The wide body, it's all squared up, 305s and all four corners. And I got to do this drag race thing with Goldberg at some point soon. He's traveling, by the way. He's on his way to Atlanta to film his show. So we're just going to hold down the fort here. And that car doesn't hook up. People explain to me, they've been asking me because I've been posting on social media, dude, how's the Hellcat? And I say, it's very American.
But that's kind of the joy of it. You know, we get so used to supercars that just grip forever. I mean, I had it on the circuit at Fontana, and it feels soft and floppy. You can slide it around, but that kind of makes it fun because you can feel the limits. You can have some fun.
I'm sure it's got loads of traction in the corners. It's got so much tire on the ground, but even with a 305, it's like you hit the launch control, it spins the tires.
Yeah.
And you can adjust the RPM. I brought it down to 1,000 RPM launch. It still blows the tires away. So I'm going to bring it down more and see. I tried it without the launch control and just trying to roll into the throttle. It just tears tires apart. I don't know how you launch that thing. It has the power to probably run low 12s, high 11s, but you're going to run 14s because you can't get that thing to hook up. Once it's going, I'm sure it's fast.
Yeah.
I bet 30 to 100 is fantastic, but zero to anything is crazy. But it puts on a good show. So here's my strategy is we're going to go to Michigan. We're going to try to do this drag race thing. If I can't get it to hook up, I'm just going to try to do like 1,000-foot burnout and put on a good show. I'm like, oops, I lost.
Yeah. I think it should be who does the longest burnout, not who's fastest.
Right? That's what it should be, a burnout contest. Yeah. It's super easy with the automatic transmission. Man, it's good to see you again. I'm glad you're back in the studio. We've got a bunch of things to talk about. We've touched on it last week or so. Of course, Goodwood. We're not going to get into Goodwood too much, but I do want to hear about the McLaren that you drove. You got some trucks that are going on, Porsche stuff, all kinds of great stuff. But I see that you got your jeans on today, which is great. Everyone's got a favorite pair of jeans that fit perfect and always look great. No one knows this better than Wrangler. Wrangler jeans made for the modern day adventures. Whether you like to ride a bike, a bronc, a skateboard, these jeans are for you. If you're in LA, skinny jeans.
I wonder where that segue was going then.
Yeah, skinny jeans. Classic or modern styles, a range of fits and a price that works for you, plus vintage re-releases. Visit Wrangler.com and check out their great selection of jeans, shirts, pants, and outerwear for men and women. Wrangler, denim made for the modern world. Yeah, see, that's a new ad. You had no idea we were going to do that one. You're like, well, I do have my jeans on today. What happened? Did I stain them? What's going on? Well, hopefully they're Wranglers. Otherwise, we're screwed.
No comment.
All right, man. What's going on? What do you got going on? First of all, tell us about the McLaren, because we're bleeding over with our Goodwood talk from the last week and whatnot. So you were invited by McLaren to drive the 600LT, the long tail.
Yeah. So this is based on the 570. This is the lightweight version. So in Ferrari speak, this was like the 458 Speciale. So it's basically the hardcore lightweight version of a 570.
So what does that mean? No radio, no air?
Not quite that far, but a lot more a lot more carbon. I mean, you can opt for the center seats in it, for example. You've got to take out the carpet, take out, you know, really strip it back. And the great thing is the exhaust now come out the top of the engine cover.
So we saw that. No, we saw that there. And I'll remind you guys that when Adam and I were up there, we did a bunch of videos. We did like 5 videos for Vero social media, and we're doing 5 videos for Motor Trend on demand.
I've never
heard of them.
No.
But our McLaren video will be on Vero.
And my McLaren video is on the Edmunds YouTube channel.
And your McLaren video will be on the Edmunds YouTube channel. So
it's already
that
there. But it was great fun. And that car's, I mean, that car is faster than the McLaren. Everybody talks about the McLaren F1 as being the ultimate hypercar.
Yeah.
This is a car that you can buy for $240,000, which is much faster. And what was kind of weird about it, I've driven at Goodwood a few times, but this was the first time I'd driven the car. So you come out of the supercar paddock, you go about 200 yards down to the start line, turn around, I mean, you know all this, and then you're sat there in the queue. So the first time I hit the brakes in anger was corner one. And McLaren's insurers insisted on putting somebody in the passenger seat, one of their pro drivers, Rob Garofol. And I said to him, what are you going to do? You haven't even got a handbrake.
Yeah.
So basically, this guy's here to witness the crash. I mean, no more than
that's
that.
All it was like, it wasn't really his fault. It was a chipmunk in the road. Like, what is he going to do?
Yeah, exactly. And it was kind of the fastest road test I've ever done, about a minute long. But I'm going to go and drive the car probably later in the year, probably in Hungary. And it was.
Well, you can't write a whole article about this? You've been in it for a minute.
It's been done before. No, not at Edmunds, but I've seen it done. But it's a great thing. I like McLaren's Germany. This is taking kind of rawer edge to it.
Yeah.
So it sits somewhere between the 570 and then the 720, which is more, you know, you put the luxury back into it. So this is stripped out. It's raw. It's loud. It's a little bit obnoxious. If you blip the throttle, you actually have flames coming out of the exhaust above the engine hood. But it looks terrific. It goes extremely hard, and I can't wait to drive it on a proper road track.
We talked to the guys at McLaren as well, and they told us that around the road course, I don't know, whatever road course they tested on, they said that this one, the 600LT, is about as quick, if not quicker, than their 720S, which is significantly more money.
I believe that. I mean, it's got 600 PS, which is, 592 horsepower, something like that. So it's got a little bit of hot, but it's focused on performance. I mean, this is a car for the track. The 720 is a car to take to Pebble Beach. The 600LT is a car for track days that you can drive there.
Does it rattle your teeth out or no?
I drove it up the hill climb, so we need to spend a bit of time on the road.
It's got to be a little loud, no real sound deadening. It's about 220 pounds lighter than the 570, I guess.
Depending how you spec it up, but with a little bit more power, but it's more about that kind of guttural feel. You know, you take out the carpet, you're sitting in a carbon fiber bucket, so it's just that much more immediate.
Do you recall how much it weighs?
Off the top of my head, you're right. It's about 220 pounds. I'm trying to remember overall. We might have to look that one up.
I want to say it's got to be 3,000 pounds a car. I don't think. Yeah. I don't know if it does 3,000 pounds.
And
I bring that up.
Because you've got the carbon monocoque, which helps save a little bit.
Yeah, and I bring that up because making a car that's street legal with airbags and bumpers and all this shit and traction control we got to put into cars, if it's 3,000 pounds, that's tough to do.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a Hellcat outside. It's got to be 4,500 pounds, 44, 43. I don't know what it is, but it's well north of 4,000 pounds, right? And it wasn't that long ago we were talking about a new 8 series. I'm like, oh, new 8 series is going to be fast. New 850 or 40 or whatever. Not the M, just the regular one's going to be 0 to 60 in 3.8 seconds. It's like, yeah, that's fast, but it's going to weigh 4,700 pounds. So now you got to do it with like an incredible amount of horsepower and torque and all-wheel drive and all that stuff. McLaren's version of it is, let's make it light. Let's give it two-wheel drive, which makes it lighter, right, compared to the four-wheel drive. Throw some horsepower on it, and maybe we ditch the carpets and the radio in the process because who needs that stuff?
Well, I was talking to their CEO, a guy called Mike Flew, who's done a terrific job of building that company up, and he was saying, You know, they want to, yeah, they're not going to get out of the horsepower race, but they also want to win the lightweight race. And if you combine the two, then that's where it is. But, I mean, these things are getting so fast. I mean, we talked about it before. These things are getting so fast.
Real fast. Yeah. I just watched, I don't know if you guys are going to start getting your hands on it, but Porsche released a little bit of a video, kind of a teaser first impression around their test track of their Mission E.
Yeah, the Taycan, as it is now.
Yeah, is that what it's going to call it?
Yeah. I mean, Mission E, great name. Everybody knows it. So they've thrown that out now. It's now going to be called the Taycan.
How do you spell it?
T-A-Y-C-A-N. So it's like the, what was the movie with Liam Neeson?
Taken.
So it's kind of, think of that. It's basically that with a different spelling.
I think of that bird with the cereal with the big nose and the stripes on his nose. What's the toucan? Chris, do you eat a lot of cereal? What's the name of that damn bird with the big nose that's...
That's a toucan, right?
Yeah.
Sells this is Fruit Loops. Toucan Sam, right?
Yeah. It's going to get confusing. It's going to get confusing when that thing comes out. Mission E is better.
Yeah. Well, I was in Atlanta last week with the... actually, I had a meeting with Porsche down there and...
How is that facility?
That's interesting because we have the Porsche Experience Center here in LA. They have another one down in Atlanta, which is their HQ. They got this fabulous building with some of the old cars in there. They had a Mission E, Taycan, whatever you want to call it this week. And out the back, they have this Experience Center. And they actually took me for a lap in a 911. I just jumped in the passenger seat. And what's interesting about it is it's just got guardrails everywhere. So it's super tight with guardrails, which just makes it feel that much faster. But I think Porsche is doing a great job with those facilities. It actually gives you a real sort of sense of experience of what those cars can do. And if the average owner who's buying one doesn't fully appreciate what, you know, the depth of ability those cars have, sitting next to a pro driver on a tight, twisty circuit like that gives you a lot of appreciation.
Do you think the Mission E is going to go over well or not? It's going to be – Porsche already shocked the system by releasing a couple of SUVs, right? So now we're over it.
Yeah, and Porsche now sells more SUVs than they do 911, than they do sports cars.
Yeah.
And as, I don't know, Goldberg wants one. If Goldberg wants an electric car, then presumably it's going to be, you know, if you can convince him, you can probably convince anybody. I mean, obviously we haven't driven it yet. It looks fantastic. You know, there's huge engineering resource behind it. I'm sure it'll drive well. And it's desirable. I mean, you know, this is what Tesla have done so well. They've made electric cars desirable. And, you know, that Porsche looks fabulous.
I'm curious to see how it works. I know you spent some time in the Jaguar I-Pace as well, and I'm fascinated with that as well because part of the brand image of these car companies is having a car meet certain standards, certain performance standards, certain luxury standards, things like that. Like if you're a Tesla and you go from the ground up, you can kind of just do whatever you want. And then you got something like a Chevy Bolt or something like that where it's really about how do we get an electric car in the hands of people as inexpensively as possible. Yeah, so they got to cut out a lot of the features of the car and you're basically just buying a drivetrain, right? And that's how you're, you know, you get yourself a Chevy Bolt for $40,000 or something.
Yeah, we have
like
one on our long-term test fleet, actually. It's a great thing. I mean, the Chevy's done a really good job with that car.
But if you're Jaguar, you can't make a Chevy Bolt. You have to have something that has the essence of Jaguar. And if you're Porsche, especially, and I would say this about BMW as well, right? They built a brand around a certain level of performance. Porsche has to meet a certain level of performance around their track. You know, they're not drag racing people, but there's going to be a certain amount of performance around a road course and that needs to meet the standards of Porsche. So I'm curious to see how they do it. Look, first of all, I think they're going to do it. Otherwise, they wouldn't release the car.
Yeah. And it's got 600 horsepower. We know that
it's going to have 600 horsepower, some version of all-wheel drive, whatever that means these days.
Yeah, it's got
days.
Two motors, yeah.
And we're all big fans of Porsche, so it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting how they do it, you know?
I think the tricky thing is the sound. I think they can make it handle great. It is going to be, you know, ridiculously quick with all that torque that an electric motor gives you. You know, what you will lose is that noise. But, I mean, we've already seen with the, you know, in the Boxster and the Cayman, four-cylinder motors that don't sound anywhere near as good as the old sixes, so... You know, they've just got to move with the times, haven't they? And I think, and it looks great. It'll be ridiculously quick. I'm sure it'll handle well. So, you know, they've got to be there, haven't they?
Yeah. You know, on the idea of Porsches, I want to ask you about the Singer Porsche. I didn't get to spend much time with it over at Goodwood, but I think you got a chance to at least look at it a bit, and maybe you can tell us why this thing is so much money, or just your thoughts on it. But first, I'm going to tell you guys a little bit about Continental. If you think of all the weird things that we find in cars, you know, I'm not talking about your garden variety French fries and melted crayons. I'm talking about things like live snakes, bizarre trinkets, the kind of stuff that makes you just wonder about folks. Well, another thing that'll make you wonder, but in a good way, are Continental belts. I bet you didn't know that they're OE in tens of millions of Chrysler, Dodge, Ford, and GM vehicles that roll off the assembly line. They're also OE on a majority of BMWs and VWs. Now, Continental is launching the aftermarket Multi-V belt with the OE pedigree. It's their OE technology series, belts that are fanatically engineered for perfect fit, form, and function. And Continental has the OE technology series Multi-V belt for 98% of the vehicles on the road in the U.S. and Canada. This is that serpentine belt that everybody has on. All the new cars have this on there. So listen, if you... you know, you get enough surprises working on your cars and trucks already. A belt shouldn't be one of them. Go with the Continental OE Technology Series Multi-V belt, the belt with the OE pedigree. To get the full story, visit oetechnologyseries.com. That's oetechnologyseries.com. So check that out. Porsche, or the guys at Singer, we've been working with maybe Marino Franchini and Williams and a couple. There's a whole bunch of people.
Williams Engineering, yeah.
Yeah, a whole bunch of fancy names to take a car that was damn near perfect, if not perfect already, for, I don't know, $350,000 to $500,000, depending on the options. Carbon fiber body, great engine, interior fantastic. We've seen beautiful photos of this car. And they come out at Goodwood and they debut a version that's 1.5, 1.8, something, 1.8 million. Great. Looks great. Looks exactly like the other ones, though. So I'm kind of wondering, how did they get to... Now, to be fair, I didn't get a chance to talk to anybody at Singer. I mean, I don't know what the thing is made out of, but it seemed like they already were there all, you know, with the top quality car. How do they add... How do they triple the price?
Yeah. I mean, it's the relationship with Williams and the technology and the material use and everything else. But I'm kind of with you that the whole joy of Singers was they were... They were taking a 964, then you were sort of bespoke in it, it was your car, and it was kind of a hard, you know, it's $500,000, an insane amount of money, but it was kind of something that you imagine, you know, you win the lot, that's what you do. When you take it to 1.8 or 1.5 million, it's just such a lot of, you know, such a huge leap. And I guess they're looking at a market saying, you know, our customers, you know, what they're spending on a boat or what they're spending on a jet, you know, this is not such a crazy amount of money. And I'm sure it will be, as a piece of engineering and as a piece of art, it will be fabulous. And I like the company. I like what they're doing. I think they've done a fantastic job so far. I just hope they're not sort of stretching themselves too far.
Yeah. I don't think it's about, hey, we've got a cool car. It's for a very special client and it's 1.8 million. My issue is they've already made a very special car for one third of the price. And you could say, hey, Williams is involved and so-and-so is involved. They're like, okay, so we get these guys involved. There are some fees involved with that, maybe some licensing fees, not $1.8 million for the licensing fees or an extra $1 million in licensing fees. So I would like to dig into that at some point. Maybe we'll invite somebody from Singer over here to the studio to chat with us a little bit about it. But it looks fantastic, and they always have. I just didn't know if you had a chance to get over there and take a look at it at all.
I'm hoping to visit them actually in a few weeks here in LA. I mean, they exist in a kind of market where people want to spend a lot of money. I remember many years ago doing the launch of the Maybach when Mercedes came to bring Maybach back. And we just had if you check out our YouTube channel, we just had the latest iteration in now. But I was on a flight to see this vehicle in New York, and I was talking to the potential owners. And they were complaining this thing wasn't expensive enough, that too many people could afford it. And I wonder whether Singer's sort of in that place where people just want to spend more and more because it's a status symbol. It's a, you know, they want to have the most expensive. It's like watches, isn't it? It's that same sort of mentality.
It's weird that they're sticking with the Maybach thing. When that came out, and then the new versions of the Rolls-Royce under BMW management came out, and Rolls-Royce seemed to get it right.
Yeah. They did. But I mean, we've just had, if you say, check out our YouTube channel, we just done a film with the latest S-Class Maybach. And it's actually, I mean, it's beautifully engineered. It's a bit more discreet than a Rolls Royce, but it's still $200,000, and that's a lot of money to spend on what is fundamentally a stretched, slightly tarted up S-Class.
Yeah, I don't know. I just kind of feel like the audience for that wants something that screams a little bit more like, check out my fancy car.
Yeah.
Understandably so. Like, that's why you buy a Rolls-Royce Ghost. That's why you buy a Bentley or a Bentley Bentayga.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, best driven at night.
Yeah. That's why you buy that thing. The Rolls-Royce, a little side note about the Rolls-Royce Wraith. We've got an old CarCast video that I did, and I just did like the biggest burnout ever in a Rolls-Royce Wraith. That thing has so much torque, you just power brake it and just tears up tires. But it only does it like twice, and then it starts saying that it's like, oh, we're not going to let you do this anymore. The car starts to show you notes saying, we're starting to exceed the temperature that we're comfortable with in the transmission. And Chris shot it. Chris filmed it for us. We were out, let's just say, a closed course with permits. And we did a big-ass burnout in a Rolls-Royce Wraith. I like that car.
You almost want the kind of voice command to come over and say, like, this is not very appropriate. You should be a British accent as well. Sorry, Matt. It's not very appropriate.
No, it could be you. It could be Jarvis.
Yeah.
It could be
it's not what I was built for.
I'm sure you noticed that the pace cars were Rolls-Royce Cullinan SUVs.
Well, the Rolls-Royce factory, of course, is on the Goodwood estate.
It's there, it's there.
Lord March basically leases the land to BMW to build a Rolls-Royce factory.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, he chugs around in a Phantom or maybe a Cullinan now.
Yeah.
What did you think of that?
First of all, they had it there all like tiger striped with the crazy camouflage on it. I like that it's big because it should be if it's Rolls Royce.
Yeah.
And I haven't been in it yet. From what I've seen, it's going to look and feel like a Rolls Royce. And I can imagine that the most complicated thing for them to accomplish is if you've driven a Rolls Royce, you get to experience what they call the magic carpet ride. It is the nicest riding car on the planet, right? Like, I can't think of anything else that's as that glorious, you know. And then it has this giant shag carpet. I don't know what kind of animal it's made out of, but you just take your shoes off and curl your toes in that thing. Yeah. And it's like, it's Rolls Royce, right?
It's wonderful.
So how do you make an SUV that actually can go off-road? No one's ever going to go off-road in it.
No.
But if you can go off-road in it, how do you give it that magic carpet ride? Oh, here's the video of this burnout. Watch this thing here. Chris has got that.
Yeah, that's just wrong.
I said that to Rolls-Royce. And they're like, oh, yeah, you're done.
Actually, I forgot to tell you, we were talking about it off air, but I forgot to tell you about the burnout mode in the McLaren, which I should do. Watching that reminded me. So it's nice to end this. So I'm sat there on the start line, the 600 LT, and the guy said, right, you know, I'll teach you about the burnout mode. And apparently one of the engineers developing the car,
That's a real thing. It's not launch mode. It's not drift mode.
No, so one of the engineers was basically at night sitting around with his computer and engineered this mode just as a bit of fun. So you get to start. So launch control is all about getting off the line quickly.
Yeah.
This is not. So the trick is you have to drive up the line, stop the vehicle, take your foot off the brake. So for launch mode, you have your foot on the brake and then
pedal down to the floor.
And you activate launch control. So all you do on this is drive up to the start line, foot off the brake, wait, and then you have to jump on the throttle. And what the computer actually measures the speed at which you press the throttle. If it recognizes that you basically kicked it as hard as you can, it activates burnout mode, spins the RPM up to about 5,000, and then just dumps the clutch. And you just sit there. So I was coming off the start, and the back end goes light and wiggles around a little bit.
Yeah.
And Robin's next. He said, "Do you know what you're doing?" Because apparently another journalist had put it in the hay bales off the start line. But I was like, "Okay, we'll give it a go." And so it fishtailed off the start line. You grab second, it continues to fishtail. Apparently into third gear, it starts to get a little bit hairy as the rear end starts.
There's so it just stays in burnout mode the whole time?
Pretty much, till the tires actually bite and away you go. But it's great. This kind of it's a bit like your Rolls-Royce film, the juxtaposition between a McLaren and all this sophisticated engineering and then a burnout mode that you'd expect to find in a Hellcat.
Well, I'll tell you, if you don't have the professional driver sitting next to you, that's going to be crash mode.
Well, watch the video on our YouTube channel.
Yeah, you have it up there already?
Yeah, it's up there already. Check it out. If you just go to the Edmunds YouTube channel, it's sitting right there.
And you do the burnout in the video?
We do the burnout straight off the start line, yeah.
We'll see if Chris can find it while we keep chatting here. What do you think of the Rolls-Royce, Cullinan?
I think it's going to be a great piece of engineering, but I can't get on with the way it looks. Yeah. You should have a Google of something called the Metro Cab, which used to run around London many years ago, and then squint a bit and you've got the Cullinan. It's interesting, none of the brands, Bentley, Bentayga's not a great-looking car, the first generation, Cayenne wasn't a great-looking car. It's almost like whenever a luxury brand does a first-generation SUV, they try and craft onto it all the styling cues that we know from a sedan and turn it into an SUV, and it never works.
Okay, Lamborghini Urus.
Exactly. Have you seen the rear... The rear door, I know it's getting geeky, but the rear door handle treatment on one of those things?
Yeah.
I mean, again, another case in point that I saw one on the road actually in London, and it looked better on the road than it does on the show stand. But yeah, another case, not a good looking car.
Now, did I just read that Aston Martin wants to do an SUV?
Yes, that is happening. That will be a kind of jacked up sort of sedan SUV. Yeah, so it'll be a Lamborghini rival.
Whose platform? Is that theirs, or are they going to do something with Mercedes, you think?
It'll be Mercedes engines. I probably should know this,
like an AMG engine or something.
It'll be because they have a partnership on the engines. The platform, if they have announced it, I've missed it. So
right, and I imagine they're going to get into some sort of hybrid technology, not straight up electric right away, because they have a brand still built on 12 cylinders. Lamborghini as well, right? They have a brand built on now 10 cylinder and 12 cylinders, so they'll probably do some sort of hybrid version, I imagine, in the SUV, which is an 8-cylinder.
Well, this is why they need these partnerships. Why Aston needs a partnership with Mercedes for the engines. Why Lamborghini needs to be part of the Volkswagen group, because it's just too expensive to develop this stuff yourself.
Yeah.
Interestingly, McLaren are developing hybrid. All their vehicles will have some sort of electrification by 2022. I think it is. They're working on that independent, but they're building 4,500 cars a year at the moment. That's going up. But they were saying categorically they will never do an SUV, or at least not before 2025. They were absolutely adamant about it.
Right. And their only all-wheel drives are right now would be like the P1, only something with some sort of hybrid technology. They're sticking pretty much with rear-wheel drive. And again, I think it kind of plays into the lightness that you were talking about.
Yeah, and if you're only selling 5,000-6,000 cars a year, you can do that. Yeah. So they're just going to say, we're going to build carbon fiber monocoque mid-engine supercars, basically, and then hybridize them.
Here's your video. This is up on the Edmunds YouTube page. You can see it's the 2019 McLaren 600LT. We've got an insane driver.
A slightly nervous driver at this point.
Let's see. Look at all that smoke.
Man, this thing's fast. There you go.
Nice little launch.
You're pretty nervous.
I like the exhaust coming out the back. You can get a different view of it. It looks good, man.
Yeah.
You like that car?
Yeah, I loved it. But you're right, I was talking to Gilbert. I know Gilbert got a little off at Goodwood, but you know, it is there by the grace of God. You got 60,000 people watching and millions more on TV, and it is a guy's driveway. I mean, we shouldn't forget this. It's 1 mile long, but it is the Duke of Richmond's drive, so it's not set up to be a race circuit.
No. Unfortunately, Goldberg hit a couple little hay bales, and he was super bummed about it. But what do you do, man? Like, adrenaline's pumping. It's a racing event. You want to do well. He had a couple practice sessions because he got there early. He raced this truck last year. He did well. Shit happens. What are you going to do?
Yeah, I get it.
You know, he was here. He owned up to it. He apologized to everybody who owns a truck because he's a good dude. And now I'm going to see him, I think next week. Next week, we're going to Roadkill Nights, August 11th. We're doing Roadkill Nights up in Michigan, and we're doing a live car cast show up there. And then we're going to drag race a couple of Hellcats down Woodward Avenue. That's why I've got that bright orange thing out in the parking lot. And It'll be fun, but I think it's just going to be a burnout contest. I'm not sure how we're going to get that damn car to hook up.
Terrible job.
On that token, I'm going to tell you guys a little bit more about Dodge. Summer is almost here. It actually is here. So hurry into your local Dodge dealership today and get deals on the only family of all-wheel drive muscle cars. I say it's here, the summer's here, but like in Colorado, it's hail. It's hail and rain and hail. Guys, check out this lineup of cars. You've heard us say it before. We've got the Dodge Charger. This is the only muscle car in its class to throw you in the back of your seat with 300 horsepower, and it still gets 30 miles per gallon. The Dodge Challenger, you could take the streets by storm with the most affordable V8 in its class. The Dodge Journey, this is the most powerful three-row all-wheel drive vehicle in its class. And the Dodge Durango, you can tear through spring showers, like if you're in Colorado, with the most powerful SUV with all-wheel drive availability in its class. And then, of course, I thought there was another one, but there's not. So hurry into your Dodge dealership and start your introduction to the Brotherhood of Muscle.
Should I talk about a Dodge I've just bought as a segue?
Yeah, I do want to ask you about that.
We just bought.
Yeah. You got the best job, man. You get to spend the boss's money.
Yeah, that's true.
What'd you guys get?
So we were actually, this year is almost like the year of the trucks for us. So actually we're just about to drive the Silverado, the Chevy Silverado, which we own a Ford F-150. And we've just been out and bought a new Ram 1500. So we're going to put them all together in the not too distant future.
So the Silverado you haven't gotten into yet.
Driving that in the next couple of weeks.
Right.
So,
But the F-150, you've got a lot of time, and you guys already have that in the fleet.
Yeah.
And you got the new Ram.
And we've got the new Ram, which we've just been out and purchased. So this is kind of interesting. I mean, this happens once every roughly 7 years that we get brand new full-size trucks. I mean, the F-150 has been around a little while now, but the Ram and the Silverado are all new.
This is such a big deal for all of these brands. They invest $1 billion into the R&D. They sell a million of these things a year. This is a huge moneymaker for all three of these companies, for the big three, because these are the most profitable cars in their lineup.
Yeah, I actually just pulled some sales figures before I came here. This is year-to-date through to the end of June. So Ford F-Series, 450,000 units. Second Chevy Silverado, just under 300,000.
This is the first half of the year.
This is just through the end of June, so this is the first 6 months of the year. Ram pickup, 233,000. So it kind of makes you realize just how critical these vehicles are, and they're big-margin vehicles. You know, Ford either makes loads of money and sells loads of F-150s, or it doesn't sell the F-150 and it doesn't make any money. It's as simple as that.
That's it. All the other cars are dressing.
Pretty much.
It is. Like the whole thing is fueled on these trucks. Tell me why you think the F-150 has been the most dominant in sales for so long. Do you think it's at this point now it's just a loyalty game? Or do they make a good truck? Do they make a better truck?
It's a great truck, and actually it does a you know, they do a good job with it. It's not just selling on reputation. In fact, all these vehicles have come on so far when you think where trucks were 10, 15 years ago. And I actually took our Ram home last night and spent some proper time in it. And we spent $60,000 on this thing. It's a lot of truck. And we were actually working.
And that's not the most expensive.
That's getting on that way, actually. I mean, one of the things we always play with as a company is, do we buy the base model or do we buy like the biggest seller? And more often than not, we do. But in this case, we wanted to try the gadgets. So we got the big screen. We got a lot of towing capacity. We got a lot of things to play with. Because what we're trying to say to people is it worth paying the extra for the big screen? Are you getting value? That kind of thing.
I would even add, get the one with all the gadgets on it, because somebody might get a less expensive one with one or two of those gadgets, and you guys should be able to test and evaluate all the gadgets. So if you tell somebody, hey, get the base model because you're a work truck, but somebody wanted it with the Wi-Fi or something so they can print invoices or do whatever that feature is, you guys got to have the one that with all the goodies on it, because you can tell them, hey, we liked everything except for the Wi-Fi, or we liked everything except for whatever or whatever, right?
Yeah, or don't buy, we would recommend buying this. We wouldn't recommend paying for this. That's exactly right. And that's the kind of mentality behind it. And these things are properly luxurious. I mean, what I really appreciate is the attention to detail that goes into all of them now, that people actually sit there and think about how these tricks are used, where you're going to put your stuff, where you're going to put your cell phone so that it charges. What are those?
Yeah.
You know, little things like the RAM has on top of the dashboard, you have a little PowerPoint, which is where you plug in your extra gadget, your extra camera, something like that. And somebody's actually thought about how people use these vehicles.
Yeah.
And I think there's when you compare where they were 10 years ago to where they are today, it's a world away. I mean, it's properly luxurious. It really is.
Yeah. So that's funny, because it feels like the R&D budget for the trucks is big enough that they can do so much, like not just testing on parts, but like focus grouping stuff. Like, where do you put your phone? Where are you using it? And should we plug it in? Should it be just like a charging pad? Or do you use a pen? Do you write stuff down? Like, where do you put your pen? Do you drink a big gulp? Do you drink coffee? Do you have three cups at once? Because throughout the day, like, how much time are you spending in your vehicle, right?
Yeah, and how much are you living with it? Where do you plug things in? And they're, they are, frankly, they're big enough to be at home. I mean, that's the only thing I struggle with them, is just how, particularly here in California, it's less of a problem elsewhere in the US. But, they are huge, and that's the problem with them.
The tough thing to really kind of test, I think, from your point of view, from a journalist point of view, is the long term. I mean, you guys do a year, but here's the thing about trucks is in 12 months, you can put 5 years of wear and tear on that thing, because trucks oftentimes can get very, very used.
Yeah.
I mean, we can put 10,000 miles a year on a car, but there's truck owners that can put 40, 50,000 miles a year.
I mean, as a default, we try to do 20,000 miles in a year in each of our vehicles as a kind of heavier use than the norm. And also the advantage we have is get lots of different drivers through it and lots of people using it for different purposes. So that helps. And one of the things we're always big on, for example, is towing, because I think there's some statistic that I think it was Dodge was shooting or Chevy that, 70% of truck buyers or full-size truck buyers are towing once a month. So we always make sure, we've just done a tow test with an Airstream, which was quite cool. That video is coming out soon with our RAM and an Airstream. So we're constantly thinking about how these vehicles are used. And of course, we treat the trucks differently to we would if we had our Jag SVR, for example.
Yeah. Well, what I like about this is when you get into sort of the finer points of it, like when EcoBoost started coming out, we have turbo six cylinders. Your nerdy little counterpart, Dan Edmonds over there, who's your director of vehicle testing.
He is. Nerdy. I think I like that.
Yeah.
I think you'd think that he's on vacation tomorrow. I think you'd actually see that as a compliment.
Oh, it is a compliment.
And he listens to the show.
Oh, no, it is a compliment, because I do count on that guy. By the way, I text him too and ask him questions like this. I'm like, hey, a friend's looking to get an F-150. Should he get an EcoBoost or should he get the 8-cylinder? And he'll come back with, is he going to tow or not? And what rear end gear is he going to get? Because if he gets a certain rear end gear, you might as well just get the V8.
Well, I think what you don't realize about Dan used to develop trucks for a living. Dan is a vehicle test engineer by trade and profession, as are other members of the test team. And I kind of, without giving you the big sell, this is kind of what sets our team apart. I mean, it's not my background, but I kind of came into Edmonds and there's a real depth of integrity and an engineering expertise that, I don't possess. And I don't think, 1% of automotive journalists do.
He likes to really look at suspension parts.
Oh, he does. Yeah. Dan, there is sometimes, when you're kind of racing to a meeting and it's like you ask a question about wheel rim width diameter or, suspension kinematics and
But I love that guy. We got to get him in here because we're going to have some good questions for him as well.
I'm going to find out if he does listen to the show now. He keeps telling me he does, so we'll find out.
We'll find out if he does. Dan's going to tweet. Chris knows him too. He's been in a bunch of times. How's the RAM? Tell us what's your overall impression so far when you're cruising the mean streets of Manhattan Beach in your full size 1500 RAM.
Well, I took it home last night. I can't park it in my garage. I had to park it on the street. But
Which everybody out there loves. It took the three smart cars, got no place to park tonight.
Exactly. So this is kind of off. We've gone for a really weird trim. This is off-white with beige interior, fake wood, and a bit of Alcantara. Oh. So it's about as far removed from a kind of alpha male truck as you can make a Ram to be. It's kind of interesting. I drove it home last night and drove it into work this morning. When you look at the level of refinement and comfort in there, and it's huge. I mean, there's so much space for five people. And then I drove up here today to meet you in a Range Rover that just happened to have on test. And I'm in and out of different vehicles from everything every week. And yeah, clearly the Range Rover is more luxurious and more refined. But jumping from a truck into what is a luxury SUV, the leap is not nearly as much as you might think now.
Right. Yeah,
and also the technology that is built into these trucks is fabulous, and it's you can enjoy this as a daily vehicle, and it can be a workhorse during the week, and then you can go and have fun with the family at the weekend and tow whatever you want. And I totally get it. I totally get why people are why they're so popular.
It used to be back in the day that you'd get an F-150 with leather interior, you get a Ram with leather interior. It's not a Range Rover. It's the quality of materials that are different. And now it just seems like it's really getting kind of pretty close. Like we're really starting to see some pretty nice interiors on some of the higher end trucks. Like you're going to tell me a Lincoln Navigator Black Label is any less of a truck than that Range Rover that you're in? I'm not sure. I'm not sure. We'll find out.
Yeah. And I like the attention. I like the attention. The Ram actually, as you open the rear doors, there's like a little bin underneath the footwell. So they've obviously found a bit of room in the chassis.
Yeah.
And they've put in what looks like a trash can. But you can take it out. You can throw it away. So if you want to cool your Cokes or your beers if you're in the back.
Yeah.
Little things like that. You think, actually, these guys, you get the feeling that people care. And it's the same, to be fair, it's the same with the F-150. And I think it'll be the same with the Silverado as well. But you actually realize people are sitting there at night thinking about this stuff rather than just, bolting together a truck and off you go.
All the little nooks and crannies and hidden and compartments and stuff that you can put in trucks. I've always wondered why they keep putting James Bond in a sports car, because what's his name who modifies the cars with the rockets and the missiles and the oil slicks?
Q.
Q. If you used a truck.
Yeah.
If you used a truck, there's so many things you can put in there.
Well, didn't they have a Defender truck in the last one?
Maybe. Oh, I didn't see the last.
Maybe. I think one of the Defenders went for crazy money at auction the other week. But anyway,
oh, yeah.
I digress.
Was that a James Bond one, or was that like a Lara Croft one?
I think it was one that was a Bond one used in
maybe
the movie.
Maybe it was a Bond one. I don't know.
I was watching, what was the new Mamma Mia film? This is a terrible admission, but I was watching the new Mamma Mia film. Right in the middle of that is the worst piece of product placement for a Mercedes truck. There's a Mercedes truck in Europe. It's the worst piece of product placement. If you are dragged to watch that movie.
A Mercedes pickup truck?
A Mercedes pickup truck in Europe.
Yeah.
And it's the worst piece of product placement you've ever seen, right in the middle of the Mamma Mia movie.
Have you driven one of those?
No.
They're not.
They look quite nice, actually.
Yeah, but they're not. They're pretty plain Jane. Like they're a base model F-150 or something for us out here. Like, don't think you're going to get a Mercedes pickup truck and you're going to get in it and it's an S-Class.
No. I mean, it's a nice truck, but also it's a smaller truck. So
right,
it's
because
not a,
Mercedes,
it's not an F-150 size.
It's easy for us to forget out here that Mercedes makes so many, like, utility type of vehicles and vans and things like that and semi-trucks, whatever.
For sure.
That we sort of forget out here. We see all the cool, fancy stuff, but we've seen it with Volvo and all kinds of trucks just running around in the UK and Italy where I was not long ago. Both my cabs were Mercedes, going to and from airports were Mercedes. And it's just that's what pulled up first. It wasn't, and I saw a cop car and a BMW. So,
well, an E-Class is the German taxi.
Yeah.
And it's Mercedes' incredible job of, and that's partly why things like the CLS exist, because if the E-Class is the taxi, then the CLS is what you buy.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to tell you guys a little bit more about JB Weld, and I want to hear what's next with you guys before we take off. JB Weld, over here, we like to do things. We like to make things here at CarCast. That's why we're happy to have a new member of the team, JB Weld. You probably know them. Of course you do. If you listen to this, you know JB Weld. JB Weld has been America's favorite epoxy for 50 years. If you have a big or small project in your home, garage, workshop, or craft room, and you need a strong, dependable, and permanent adhesive, something with some real strength to it, try JB Weld Epoxy. It's super easy to use. You can find it online and in all of your favorite places, including Home Depot, Lowe's, AutoZone, O'Reilly's, Advanced Auto Parts, Walmart, and Amazon. You guys can click over to acarcastshow.com, see that Amazon banner, click on it, go buy some JB Weld. All the places you hang, whether you're at whether you're a pro or experienced DIYer, you'll find JB Weld. It's made in the USA, and it's the best you can use. Can you love an epoxy? I'll tell you what. Yes, you can. We do over here. Your projects deserve the best. It's what we use when we need the best results. JB Weld, world's strongest bond. What's next for you guys? You got your Silverado.
We got a Silverado, which is big news. So we've just been in San Francisco as we speak, actually. Mark Takahashi's up there for his driving the new Bullet Mustang. And you've had a play in that as well.
Oh, actually, I'm going to go, as we're recording this, I'm going to leave in like a day, and I'm going to go up to San Francisco, do a day or two in the Mustang Bullet, but then I'm going to drive it home. I'm going to drive it back to L.A. and keep it for a week.
And check out the original Bullet Mustang, which they've got up there. The one that was at Goodwood.
Yeah,
it's also up there. So we've been. If you go to our social media, you can see some pictures of that now. Silverado test. We're off to Sweden shortly to drive the new Lexus, the UX, the little one. All sorts of things going on. Lots of new developments on the site as well. So well worth checking out, Edmunds.com.
And how you've been doing? Okay, you've been paying your fines.
I'll be paying my McLaren. Yeah.
We were talking about it earlier. He got a ticket in the mail, like a photo ticket in London. They sent it to McLaren, and then they sent it to him. They're like, "This is you, buddy. You better pay up."
I was trying to slide this through expenses. I don't think it's going to happen.
It's not going
to
happen. This is all on you. This is out of your pocket.
So basically, my risk. But if you go into central London during the week, there is a congestion charge zone, which basically means you have to pay £11. That's about $15 to actually drive into the city centre if you're not in an electric car. And I'd completely forgotten about it. After Goodwood, I went back up to town to see some friends and see my folks. And McLaren very kindly lent me a 720S. So I drove up to town, stayed with a friend, parked it in the ground. And on Monday, then drove back to McLaren to fly home and didn't think too much about it. And suddenly realized that I'd actually driven through the center of London, got on the plane, forgot all about it. So now I have this thing arrived in the post, which is a fine for London congestion charge. And on it is this picture of me in a 720S in the center of town. It just looks ridiculous.
I was telling us, like, you need to change that to your new social media profile picture.
So I've got $100
fine. It's like using the mugshot when you get arrested, but you could use that. I don't understand it. Is it like out here like fast pass? Like if you don't have the fast pass on your dash, you get the ticket? Or how do you pay normally, or you're not supposed to drive on those roads?
So you have cameras all over London which read your number plate and take a picture of you. And then you have to go online. If you own a car, you can pre-register and then the cameras spot it and know that you're registered. Obviously this wasn't my car. So it reads the number plate, and then you have to go online and pay £11, $15, and then you're good to go for the day. I just forgot. So apologies, McLaren, sorry for the hassle.
I think we have that. Like if you drive down south and you get on like the 73 toll road, if you're going to Newport or something, like you can just get – I think that's the one that you can get on it, and then you'll see a sign that'll say something like paytoll.com, and then like afterward
– Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like you could just type in – like you get a certain amount of days, like 2 days, 3 days – and you can type in where you exited and, you know, got on and got off and just pay it ahead of time.
Yeah, it gives you a choice. You could either pay the fine or the toll.
Yeah.
It's weird. Yeah. It's like, okay, I'll pay the toll.
He chose to pay the fine. Yeah. all right. Thank you. Thanks, Alistair. Thanks for coming in. I always enjoy the conversation. I'm going to go have some fun with the Mustang Bullet. And then we're going to go to Michigan and do a live CarCast show. Hope you guys come out for that. What we're thinking, I'm getting a little more information about it, is we're going to be at the Roadkill Nights, Woodward Avenue. Again, I haven't been there, so I don't know. They're going to be drag racing all day on Saturday. Leah Pritchett, Matt Hagan, that there's top fuel cars or funny cars out there, and they're just drag racing throughout the day. And around 4 o'clock, we're going to be doing CarCast live on top of the Dodge semi truck, and then we're going to talk to the CEO of Dodge, Fiat, Chrysler. We're going to talk to that guy. We'll maybe talk to Leah Pritchett. We're going to talk to drag racing. Things are changing. So we'll get down, we'll get some of the details on that. So I think that's going to happen around 4 o'clock, local time in Michigan. And then something around 6 or 6:30, they're going to do sort of this celebrity, drag race competition. Some of our friends, Chris Jacobs is going to be out there and Freiberger and Finnegan and I don't know who, but, maybe we'll just turn it into a burnout contest. Then we'll be back for a week, and then we go to Monterey. Are you going to Monterey?
I am going to Monterey. Yeah, yeah.
You are?
Hugely excited about it.
Right? Have you been? Has it been forever?
I've been once, but that was a good few years ago, so very excited.
Well, we will be up there. Of course, you're going to find us at the track because we love the track. We're bringing the Paul Newman's 1985 GT1 Championship race car. If you guys seen on my social media, we put a little teaser video up. We haven't run that car in 33 years. Well, we haven't owned it, but it hasn't run in 33 years. We just finished rebuilding it, and we're going to hit the dyno with it. We're going to do a little track testing before we get out there. But so far, so good. It's running good. It's running strong. We got a big presence with Nissan out there. Saturday, come to the track. If you're in the area, I know it's expensive up there and I know it's expensive to stay. But if you're in the area, buy tickets to the track on Saturday. Come out, see us. We're going to be doing, Adam and I are going to be doing CarCast live around noon in the Nissan booth at the track. And then he'll be back in the car that Saturday as well. He's racing in the morning and then racing in the afternoon. And we'll be at the Quail. Are we going to see you at the Quail?
You'll see me at the Quail? Sounds terrible, doesn't it?
You won't see Chris at the Quail. He'll be eating and drinking and running around. He will be there. But you probably won't see him much.
I'll be a big blur.
Yeah. Just a big blur. And you won't be able to talk to him. His mouth will be full.
That's a crazy event. I love it. But
it's a fantastic event. Tune in this Friday as well for CarCast. Speaking of the Quail, we're going to have Gordon McCall on CarCast. He's calling in to give us an update on what are the featured cars at the Quail and his Jet Center event that he does on Wednesday night as well. So, and a lot of good auction stuff. All right, so thanks for coming in. You guys check out Edmunds.com. Go check out the video of Alistair going up the hill in the 600 LT McLaren. He did not hit anything on the way, so it's a win for you. He did get a ticket, so that's a lose for you. To be fair, Goldberg dented the truck and doesn't have to pay for it.
That's true.
All right, so for Chris and for Goldberg and for Alistair and me, I'm Matt DeAndrea. Until next time, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.